What is happening? Welcome to the Plus Pitch Podcast, the morning pitching podcast from PitcherList.com. My name is Nick Pollock. Today is April 22nd, and yes, we are going to talk about baseball. I do want to address the elephant in the room. There was no Plus Pitch Podcast on Saturday and Sunday, and I think I'm making the decision to not expect a Plus Pitch on the weekends moving forward. It's just one of those things where I found myself busier than I expected on weekends, and as I'm trying to get out of the roundup and the rankings, it just hasn't worked out so far. That said, when I do have the time, I will have surprise ones on the weekends. So when I can, I will do it, but let's just make the expectation that I will not have a Plus Pitch on the weekends moving forward. And to get all the information for that, well, of course, you have my SB Roundup and you have my streaming article on the site that you can read as well, which is pretty much what that podcast is anyway. But all right, looking at pitchers from yesterday's games, Mitchell Parker. What are we doing with this guy? 7 innings, 0 runs, 3 hits, 0 walks, and 8 strikeouts. This was against the Astros, who, I should say, are not the strongest right now. Mitchell Parker last week survived against the Dodgers, surprised the heck out of us with that. It was a 4-seamer and a curveball. The 4-seamer at like 91, 92, but it has good extension, not amazing extension, just above average, with 17 inches of vert, which is, again, above average and good. It's not like it's 18 or 19 just going, oh my gosh, from the left side. And it's steep. It's a 0.7 HAVAA, which is essentially saying, hey, look, this doesn't actually help you upstairs. That's actually bad. Like, that was D.L. Hall's and A.J. Puck's that made me out on those guys, right? So, Mitchell Parker, are you really doing enough on that fastball? Maybe. The big thing is the curveball. The curveball is a really good pitch. He throws it for strikes a ton. I saw Yordan Alvarez flinch against that pitch multiple times yesterday. And against the Dodgers, Mitchell Parker's curve is what, you know, really brought him along. Thing is, against the Astros, all of a sudden, it was kind of funny, he threw a splitter. And after he threw a splitter, then they showed a graphic, but what does Mitchell Parker throw? And it's just fastball curve, right? Because he hadn't thrown a splitter in the Dodgers game. All of a sudden, he throws like 22% splitters against the Astros. And I think he got 7 whiffs on those. 7 for 18. And that was a huge thing. Now, that's a splitter. And fastball curve splitter can work, absolutely. If that's what Mitchell Parker does, that could very well be a consistent thing, and he commanded it pretty dang well. He kept that splitter low, threw this curveball for strikes, and the four-seamer was around and helping out as it could. And he did well against two good offenses, we think, right? Because the Astros, I don't really know. Now, the next start is a solid one for Mitchell Parker. That's nice, and it makes it worthwhile to go for, I believe, against the Marlins, and that feels like, yeah, that's something you would go for. So you should be picking him up. But is he now like the next hot thing? I don't think so. I don't know how much I can buy into that splitter showing up. I don't think the four-seamer is an elite offering. And the curveball is good. But is that enough? And it's also the Nationals, right? The Nationals are not a good team to pitch for. This is also incredibly efficient. 73 pitches in 7 innings tells me, okay, you threw a ton of strikes. So I think guys are going to be a little more aggressive. They're going to kind of understand the book on Mitchell Parker, and he's going to have a low floor. He has the shag rug. I think he's more hittable than this line would suggest of 7 innings, 0 runs, 3 hits, 0 walks, and 8 Ks. 12 whiffs, 36% CSW, 73 pitches, which means those 12 whiffs are actually translated more to like a 16% swing strike rate, like 16 over 100, right? So I like this, especially with the Marlins, and you want to pick him up in 12-teamers, but I would have said do not break the bank for Mitchell Parker. I think I did an SP Fab forecast, which is just for PL Pro members. It comes out on Fridays, and you guys should begin getting PL Pro and listening to that podcast, because it is the best breakdown, I think, for the next week ahead that I do anywhere. And thank you all so much for signing for PL Pro and supporting the site. All right, other guys from yesterday's games. Tyler Glasnow, he's going to ace. We have Jose Soriano looking great. 6 innings, 0 runs. Awesome. He also had 4 for 11 splitter whiffs, which is cool. I don't know if that's going to really stick around. His curveball got strikes, 42% CSW, and he had 97-mile-per-hour sinkers. Now, he's not the best command guy, but Jose Soriano doing this in Cincy and then now getting the Twins, like, yeah, let's go for that and see how it goes. Cole Irvin had a great game against the Royals, and I'm not going to buy that whatsoever. He was down 2 ticks, and yeah, don't lean into Cole Irvin. That was a nice one. Okay, let's not get hasty here. Casey Mize looked better. It's not quite everything I want. Like, 53% CSW on the splitter is nice, obviously. But the slider went zero, I think, for like 20 whiffs or something like that. Maybe zero for 22, I think I remember correctly. He's not quite at the spot I want him to be, but he took advantage of the Twins. We're going to keep going along here. He's getting fastballs where he needs to. It's a good fastball. It's going to work for him. He's going to be able to go six innings like he did here. Cal Quantrill, Cole Story, bro, like whatever. Yeah, no. What's really funny about this one, it was a zero through six in the numbers. I just like numbers. So like zero in runs, 12 whiffs, that's one and two. Three hits, four strikeouts, five walks, six innings. You know, that's kind of funny. I was like, oh man, did he go 78 pitches? 108 pitches. Oh, come on, Cal Quantrill. Yeah, sorry. 27% CSW, so it's there. But yeah. Anyway, Luis Gil against the Rays finally got that win and went over five innings, 5.2 innings, zero runs, two hits, three walks, nine strikeouts. Yes, let's go. Finally, this was like his judgment day. If he didn't take advantage of this one, you were dropping him. Just being like, all right, we can't wait any longer for this. And he came through. That said, 71% four-seamer strikes is great, 82% on the slider, but 52% on the changeup. And the changeup in the spring was actually 60% plus strike rate. Like, that was actually the thing that got me excited, really excited about Luis Gil, because I thought of him as a four-seamer slider guy with this really good four-seamer, but the command was kind of wonky before, and just being two pitch as strikes was, like, not enough, right? For Jared Jones, it's easy. He's just 70% strike rate on both of them, so who cares? But not for Gil, right? And having a changeup they throw strikes with, oh, man, that's a game changer. Kind of like how I was excited about Christian Javier before he went in the IL with a neck injury, and that's so annoying. So Luis Gil, well, he hasn't been able to do that with his changeup. So I'm still tepid, and this does feel a little bit like a Dennis. That is a guy who hasn't been doing well, and he has that one good start, and he doesn't stick around like Dennis from 30 Rock. He shows up and isn't around for a long time. And I'm a little worried about that. So if you're on the fence about holding on to Luis Gil or not, I would say if like you have a lot of really good options and Gil is one of them, I would say Gil's probably the short man still, because this could be a Dennis and just a one-time thing, and then it goes and reverts against the Brewers. Also, the Rays aren't very good. Now, I will mention Gil throwing 71% four-seamer strikes does feel like the real impetus. It's a thing where his four-seamer is just that good, and if he throws into the zone enough, he's going to be good enough, right? Like, his last start where he had, what, like, eight walks or seven walks? All of those missed way up and out of the zone. And he was able to bring them more down, which I don't really love for him, but as a non-precise pitcher, the top of the zone is not really the thing that he's going to get anytime soon, I don't think. So, yeah, that's where I'm at, Luis Gil. Hopefully, he's able to get the changeup working, but this could be something that we just drop after the Brewers. George Kirby, ace is going to ace in Colorado. That's cool. It's funny, he's doing the up and away thing with his four seamer again, but it's all inside the zone still. I just like, just get it a little bit out of the zone, just a touch out of the zone. And you had a walk, what's wrong with you? Colin Ray against the Cardinals, sure, it happened. Maybe that's a birthday party, I guess. I don't know, whatever. Frankie Montas took a comebacker to the arm and got removed from the game. That's unfortunate. Zero strikeouts for Jordan Hicks with four walks, but one run in five innings. Why? Because his sinker is just good in the zone, but he had nothing else. 8 over 30 splitter whiffs is nice, but didn't get a good strike rate on it. His sweeper was a terrible strike rate. And like 8% sweeper, 8% CSW sweeper is not it. I think it was 1 for 13 or something like that, 1 for 12. Yeah, no, can't do that. Jordan Hicks, it's fine because like I think the sinker is going to be enough. And like this was a one whip, one earned run in five, but zero strikeouts. How am I supposed to butter my bread with this? Jordan Hicks, I don't really think is going to really transform into this amazing thing, but I think he might have some stretches where all of a sudden the sweeper's cooking and the sinker's going, and that's going to be nice, but maybe he's showing his floor now with the sinker as a strike pitch. We'll see. Josh Minkowski for the Red Sox is probably going to get on their start as he's taking over Garrett Whitlock at the moment, with also Pivetta out. That means that him and Criswell are involved. Yeah, don't touch him. Cool. All right. Emerson Hancock against the Rockies got the win. Six innings, one run, four hits, one walk, four Ks. He's a Toby. And he did his thing about going along the edges in cores, and that worked out. And that's cool, but I don't really want to go for him much. Aaron Nola got the win against the White Sox. Ace is going to ace. It's also the White Sox. He actually did not have his best performance. His pitches were way hittable in the zone. Like, what I loved last time out, the curveball was precise. Like, so much so. It was beautiful. And, yeah, not so much here, but okay, it's the White Sox, so, sorry, the Cry Sox, as I'm calling them, because they put their fans in tears. Sonny Gray got a golden goal for looking like a stud. Sweeper and curve were dominant for 13 whiffs here. 19 whiffs overall, 42% CSW with 12 strikeouts against the Brewers in 93 pitches. And really the main thing here, 93 pitches, all is good with Sonny Gray. And we're going to love this. Is he going to be like an SP2 for your team? Probably not. But like, borderline 2-3. You know, better than like Musgrove at the moment, or like Bassett, that kind of stuff. Slice of Sony, do not go after that one, even though he did well. And I know that Merrill Kelly is likely hitting the IL with a shoulder injury, but he had 64 pitches in six innings and two whiffs. Like, no. And Tanner Bibee against the Oakland Athletics got the win. This was actually really fun because Tanner Bibee did the Blake Snell blueprint. Finally, like I've been waiting since last year for Bibee to do it. When he debuted, I was like, cool, can you get your four seamers up and your changeup and slider actually down? And he did it against the Oakland Athletics, 15 whiffs, 36% CSW, 5.2 innings for a Philly, 2 earned runs, 5 hits, 2 walks, 8 strikeouts. Awesome. Thing is, I've changed my tune a little on Bibee in the sense that his four-seamer is so steep that he's doing himself such a disservice throwing high four-seamers because he should be doing the Zach Gallen approach of four-seamers for low called strikes so that when they do swing at it, it's going to be harder to actually do damage against. It's going to be steeper, so it's going to be more grounders. It's going to be less barrels, or fewer barrels, I should say. And because the whole journalistic community is just now going away, or really, I should say, popular media is now using just less instead of fewer all the time. And it's wrong! but then he should be throwing these changeups and sliders under the zone and at the bottom of the zone, too. And whatever, against the Athletics, that's cool. But now he gets Atlanta, and I'm staying away from that. We have a lot of other guys to talk about from yesterday's games and, of course, tomorrow's streaming options. We're going to talk about all of that after this break. So we're going to talk about Chris Bassett. But by the way, you really should be getting PL Plus or PL Pro. These subscriptions help us keep our staff alive and keep the lights on, keep them alive. My gosh. No, really just keep Petros moving as it is. It's the best way to show your support. You get an ad-free website. You get our SP... Fab Forecast podcast that I do is exclusive for PL Pro members. You get all of our fantasy tools, including our daily projections, as well as these really fun tools, the PLV tools for minor leaguers that's coming out in May. So you can actually assess hitters more than just like K minus walk rate or whatever. No, actually their ability against minor league pitchers is going to be insanely good. That's for PL Pro members. You also get my sit and start grid. You get my two start pitchers. But most importantly, PL Plus and PL Pro get both ad-free and access to our Discord. It is not toxic. We ban everyone who makes it toxic. And it is 1,500 members large. It is the best place to talk about baseball. So go to pitcherlist.com/premium. Use code podcast to get a discount today. And when you sign up for yearly. So go check that out. Chris Bassett, 5.1 innings, 200 runs, 6 hits, 3 walks, and 4 strikeouts. You just start Bassett and who cares? Joe Musgrove against the Jays got the win. 7 innings, 300 runs, 5 hits, 0 walks, 3 Ks. He's kind of a Holly, but I guess even more like a Toby at this point. He's just like Bassett, and I'm going to have him very close on the list today. That means I'm going to be pulling down Musgrove, even though he's doing well. He's showcasing that his skills are not that of hinting an ace is going to ace. Like, he's not going a strikeout an inning or more. And that's, I think, because really his hard stuff isn't killing it, while the secondary stuff is more expected constantly by batters. And it makes for a guy that just isn't getting the whiffs that he used to. And that's fine. He's going to be able to go 6 frames constantly and give you good win chances and all that kind of stuff. It's very productive. It's just not that ace kind of guy. Michael Lorenzen against Atlanta got the win. 6 innings, 300 runs, 3 hits, 3 walks, 7 Ks. Against Atlanta, it's crazy. It doesn't look like Texas is going to move him to the pen after this. His slider was very efficient for 5 over 16 whiffs. And I don't really believe long-term into Lorenzen because he's throwing these heaters at 94, 95, which sounds decent velocity-wise, but they're just not that good. I don't think this is going to be that great for Lorenzen. He could go against the Reds in Texas. That might be a stream. Could be one of those Vargas rule things that he went through last year, but yeah, I don't really like Lorenzen that much. Ross Stripling, I don't like at all, though, so don't go after that. Hunter Brown went against the Nationals, and it was supposed to be Christian Javier yesterday, but they had the neck soreness, so they pushed up the start for Brown, which isn't really fair to him. But he did go 84 pitches here in 4 innings, 300 runs, 4 hits, 2 walks, 6 Ks, which innately isn't so bad. 13 whiffs, 35% CSW. But obviously the ratios are not what you wanted, especially against the Astros. And lasting only four innings, he was better than he was against the Royals. Like, that Royals game was just such a bad pitching performance, and his stuff across the board was better. Not amazing and pristine, but absolutely better, and that's a thing. So at least we're like moving forward in progress, but I would not start him in cores. Edward Cabrera went against the Cubs and got the win. 5 innings, but 300 runs, 7 hits, 3 walks. That's not good. But 7 Ks, 12 whiffs, 33% CSW. So on one hand, yeah, he did get a little unlucky when it came to his hits. The big difference here, if you remember the first start that got me so excited about Edward Cabrera, is because all of his pitches got strikes. The lowest one was a 61% strike rate. I believe that was on his slider, while the four-seamer, changeup, and curve all were like 70% plus. In this one, his curve went just 11 for 25 strikes, and that is the difference. Right, 70% strikes on the changeup, which is, I say changeup in parentheses or quotation marks in the roundup, because it's an 92 to 93 mile per hour changeup, which is just like a fastball for many others. It's a very, very good pitch. Sometimes he does elevate it too much and it does get damaged because of it. But 13 for 13 slider strikes without allowing a hit is such a big deal, even though some of them were hung, 54% CSW, and that really changes things for him. So the curveball traditionally is a better strike pitch than what this was. I mean, this was like, what, 40% strike rate? That can't happen. 44%, exactly. Yeah, that will be different for Edward Cabrera. But as long as that slider is there, which it is, and that's two straight games of it being a dependable offering, that's going to be a big deal with that changeup. So I'm a believer in Edward Cabrera right now. This is also a tougher offense too, so he had to do a little bit extra. Seth Lugo against the Orioles, 5.1 innings of 4 runs, 9 hits, 1 walk in, just 1 strike. How am I supposed to butter my bread with this? But this was the Orioles, and he's a Toby, and you should really consider Seth Lugo as a Toby. He is not the de facto, no, I'm going to get this solid game every week. No, he's a Toby. That means like he's like a 3.8 ERA with a 1.20 whip and like a 22% strikeout rate. That's what you should expect from Seth Lugo. Does that make him a Holly? Maybe. Yeah, but he's like not going to be a 25% plus. Right? We know that. So, treat him thusly. I mean, at least the Royals are winning more games, and that's cool. Darius Vines got demoted. So, sorry. I mean, went against the Rangers, and we didn't really expect that. Now it's Bryce Elder, and you're like, hey, Nick, should I go after Bryce Elder? I don't really think he's that good. It's a two-step this week, and maybe even want to chase some wins, by all means. Points League's a little bit more favorable. But I think Bryce Elder is not that great. There's a reason why he didn't make the team in the first place. I mean, Ronald Lopez was good, but Elder wasn't great either. And yeah, Bryce Elder is sinker slider. He might go on a Vargas rule, but that's it. Martin Perez, speaking of which, went against Boston in PNC Park. 4 innings, 4 runs, 6 hits, 4 walks, and 7 Ks. But then he gets the Giants next, and it's like, maybe. Like, it was a Vargas rule. We know this. He's not going to have this career renaissance or something. Come on. It was such easy opponents before. Yeah, we'll see. Kyle Hendricks against Miami. 4 innings, 4 runs, 6 hits, 0 walks, 5 Ks. Cubs, stop throwing Kyle Hendricks out there. Like, you didn't even let him go more than 4 innings. 56 pitches for a reason, you know? And he wasn't hurt. I checked. So I just can't, right? I just can't. Louis Varland against the Tigers. 2.2 innings of 4 runs, 3 hits, 4 walks, and 2 strikeouts. Yeah, no, you just move on from Louis Varland. I wish this was going to be better, but it's not. So, Louis Varland, I know that there is a world where you have 4 seamers upstairs like Bailey Ober, and you have those secondaries that are working underneath, but nope, it's just not there, and it stinks, and I hate everything, and it's so frustrating that when he gets opportunities, he doesn't take advantage of them. Hopefully, he goes to the minors and figures it out, but until then, do not touch Louis Varland. Simeon Woods Richardson, honestly, the Twins should call him up and start him instead of Varland right now. Aaron Civale against the Yankees. He had a clunker, so what? He gets the Cry Sox next, so we're all good. Nick Nastrini against the Phillies, speaking of the Cry Sox. 3 innings of 5 runs, 6 hits. Oh, 5 walks, 3 Ks. I do see a world that Nick Nastrini actually is good, but also only 3 wins total for the White Sox this year. It's kind of funny. I was like, no, man. And Eric Fede and Soroka, they're going to get some wins, and Garrett Crochet, because like you got to get wins at some point. They're going to score more than 1 or 2 runs. maybe not, and I feel really dumb right now. Like, I figured they get, like, you know, like a 33% win chance, and the good pitchers are going to get those, but that offense has been shut out, what, 7 times already? Jeez. Yeah, Nick Mastrini is actually kind of interesting. I picked him up in Tout Wars, but I should have been more aware of Sunday's start, and now I'm regretting it because I have to start him this week. But I do think that he could do well against the Rays. It was more of like a stash play for me because I have a lot of really good options in my pitcher, so I kind of do this sometimes where I'll exchange one start guy in my Tout Wars. This is a weekly league that when you pick someone off of the free agency, you have to start them. So I said, okay, fine. Like, I like Reese Olson, and I would start him against the Twins, but I'll take the chance of stashing someone for this week and putting in Nastrini instead of Olson just for this week so that I can, at least, like, see if that works out and have a stash, then, like, Reese Olson, I'll put him back next week. I'll do that sometimes in Tout Wars is the way I make it work. I regret this one. I'd much rather just not do this one. But that could work against the Rays, and I think there is something there with Nastrini. It's a good fastball shape if he does have better command with that slider down or slider slash cutter down in glove side and changeups arm side. This can be all right, especially against the Rays. So don't overlook that against them when this was against the Phils. Peter Lambert, never. And Adrian Hauser against the Dodgers. I was actually hanging out with Alex Fast yesterday afternoon, and I remember we both looked up for a second and saw Shohei Ohtani hit, like, the most hung curveball, just yard. And we're like, yeah, well, duh. It was such a bad pitch, but Hauser, all you do is just chuck fastballs and hope for the best, and you start breaking balls. Like, don't throw that one against Shohei Ohtani. Something I'm going to add today, which I think is fun, I've been thinking about it for a while, is, if you don't know, I stream this podcast live as I do it on playback.tv/pitcherlist. And what I would like to do is, every so often, in the corner of my eye, as I ask this, I know I see chat questions come in, and I usually don't answer them because I can't. I'm recording this podcast live. But for those that stick around to the end, it might be you who I talk about at the end of this. So at the end of this starting pitching rankings for tomorrow's games, I will answer one of the questions from Playback on this podcast. So thank you so much for sticking around. Pablo Lopez against the White Sox, ace is going to ace. This is for tomorrow's pitcher rankings. Kevin Gausman against the Royals. Logan Gilbert against the Mets. Grayson Rodriguez against the Angels. Max Fried against Miami. Ryan Pepiot against the Tigers. Marcus Stroman against the Athletics. All these are pretty obvious, all good matchups, nothing for you to stay away from. You have Logan Gilbert against the Rangers, which I understand being a little bit more hesitant about, but no, you're going to do that one. And Michael King, same thing again in Coors. Coors is not as scary as you think you should do that. Probable start to your Tanner Houck against the Guardians. The Guardians are hot and cold, and so is Tanner Houck, so this is why he's on an auto start, because I know complete game, shutout, all that kind of stuff, but, like, Tanner Houck the start before was dead middle, so maybe that does work out. We have Christopher Sanchez at Cincinnati. I think Sanchez is in a good enough place that you're going to do this in Cincinnati. Cincinnati can be really risky, but I think Sanchez is fine for that. Paxton gets the Nationals. It's the Nationals. Fine. Even though you just walked, what, 7 batters, 8 batters? You're going to do that. You should be better. Good win chance. Michael Wacha against Toronto. Debatably a questionable start, and part of me, I think in the sit start, I actually made this questionable. I feel pretty good about Wacha. And arguably, it should be down there, but whatever. Do what you want there. Same thing with Severino, who I put into probable start against the Giants. I think that Severino isn't that great, but it is the Giants. And there's an argument to be made that Severino should be in this, while Wacha should be in questionable start. By all means, if that's how you feel, go ahead. But I just generally feel that Wacha with the Royals, that's a decent win chance. And he goes 6 innings and has his command more often than not. Questionable start here. We have Dane Dunning as our stream pick of the day against the Mariners. Wade Miley at Pittsburgh. Miley can make it work. He can go 5-6 innings. Pirates aren't very good. Dane Dunning against the Mariners, not a very good offense. We've seen Dane Dunning do well, good offense on his side. It is against Logan Gilbert. Keep that in mind. It's questionable. I'm not really targeting that one. Andrew Abbott versus the Phillies. There's a strikeout upside there. If Abbott actually goes his 4-seamer upstairs, which he did showcase last time, maybe that does work out. Eric Fede at Minnesota could work. That's more of a quality start chase there. And do not start team tier is Kenta Maeda against the Rays. There is strikeout upside, but man, he looked so bad last time, and I'm just moving away from Maeda completely. Trevor Rogers is doing the Blake Snell blueprint, which is cool, but it's against Atlanta. Don't want to do that. Griffin Canning against the Orioles. fastball velocity was up higher against the Rays. Still is a little questionable with his secondary stuff. I'd be careful with Kenning here, especially against that hot offense with the Orioles. J.P. France against the Chicago Cubs hasn't really pulled it off much. Hasn't gotten the wins, of course. Cubs are good. Tommy Henry has had these weird good starts, and the Cardinals aren't very good. Jordan Wicks versus Houston. I wanted to put him higher. Then I realized that Wicks hasn't been the guy that we want him to be yet. And if I saw one start that was, hey, look, Wicks be like that, then I would feel better about this offense that, or facing this offense that hasn't been that good so far. Billy Falter against the Brewers. We've seen him be okay, so maybe this works out. Ryan Feltner, even in Coors and the Padres, we've seen that slider get whiffs, forcing him to be okay. Because look, the rest of this is bad. It's Ben Lively against the Red Sox and Steven Matz against the Diamondbacks, Paul Blackburn against the Yankees, and Patrick Corbin against the Dodgers. That is it for today. Thank you all so much for listening to this podcast. And of course, as promised, I'm going to answer a question from chat. And the question I've got today is, who's better for Dynasty? This is from Jables. Thank you so much for being a part of the playback stream today. Jables asks, Casey Mize, Luis Seal, or Mackenzie Gore for Dynasty? That's a tough one. My gosh. I want to say that it's Mackenzie Gore. I think he has the most potential of an arsenal that works long term. You could also say that he's... Mize seems like it's one is a guy that is locked in more for this year, while Keel has the ultimate ceiling. Problem with Mize and Keel is Mize doesn't quite have the same stuff that Gore has, and Keel has the worst command of the lot. So if you're talking about Dynasty, I think all three of them are good for this year, while Gore over his career trajectory seems more like a lock to be good. However, wins are a big thing too. So if you're focused on wins for this year, Gore might be the toughest one. But yeah, I probably would say Gore is the best one there. All right. Thank you all so much for following today. My name is Nick Pollock. And may your BABIPs be low. And may your BABIPs be low and your strikeouts high.